Welcome to Peter Hill Explains, where I discuss things scientific and we have a conversation. The idea of conversations is not getting the idea completely across you. I tell you a few things, you check things out. The idea is that conversations don't necessarily end with a aha moment of, oh, gee, that person's smart, and move on. It's just a conversation, just to talk things through. The overall sub-story through is that I'm going through cardiac rehab and learning to speak more coherently and fluently off the top of my head. And also just letting ideas percolate through and settle down, much as you would do if you're allowed back into a classroom to teach normally. You'd be able to, through conversing with the students, pick up. So if you haven't been in the classroom for a while, it's a bit hard to do it. So this is my secret weapon to slowly improve when I get back there. Now, one of the things I'm doing is reading from Cosmos magazine. I'll continue doing this. There's sort of certain threads. It's actually written at a level which is good and easy to understand. Perhaps it may be written at a level which is perhaps sort of confronting a bit to, say, quantum physicists who are reading it. But then again, it may assume scientific knowledge that, you know, kids may not have. So you sort of try and balance it in your head. And you can hear in the background, perhaps you can hear some of the Aussie birds, which are all around. There's parrots and lorikeets and sulfur-crested cockatoos and all sort of pretty boring birds around. So you'll hear that in the background. So let's get on to our main article. And the aim of this one is to have it not read too quickly so it's too hard to understand, so you can hear it nice and gently, and also that I can add a bit of, I suppose, style to my podcasting. That's what I'm aiming for in this one. It's also a very interesting article, absolutely deeply interesting from just a whole number of factors in terms of it's got an education twist at the end. Basically, the education twist is that you can do all you want, but to actually lock in the memory, you have to have an emotional hook to actually push it in, and you've got to have certain things set up for that memory to go in, to actually for someone to learn something. It's got a bit of optical fibres, it's got a bit of genetics in it. It's a really interesting article. So here we go. Lighting up memory lane. The century-old ideas of engrams, memory traces in our brain, turns out to be correct, Elizabeth Finkel reports. What is a memory? In 1904, German biologist Richard Sermon came up with the idea that a memory with the idea of a memory trace held together by a connection of a discrete group of brain cells. He named that imaginary physical circuit an engram. Engrams went on to have a robust life in science fiction and Scientology. There you go. But as far as proving their existence in the brain, that had to wait the development of a light-activated tweezers to dissect out the fine surgery. Employing the so-called optogenetic tweezers in 2012, Sumu Togwa's lab of MIT first showed that an engram was real. Now, a paper published in Science last April, the same group has revealed the details of how engrams are made in one part of the brain, the hippocampus, and then uploaded for storage in the cortex, the outermost layer. The unpicking these details of memory storage opens the door to find new ways to tweak memory, either when it fails or becomes hyperactive. In principle, this study shows how we might treat these cells that become overactive in PTSD, says Pankaja Sa, director of the Queensland Brain Institute. So that's a memory which is post-traumatic stress disorder. In some ways, it's a surprise to find these very complete memories can be so discrete. The first experimental evidence of how human memories are formed and stored goes back to just 1953. That's when 27-year-old American Henry Mollison had his hippocampi removed as a means to cure his seizures. To the horror of his surgeons, the operation also destroyed his ability to make new memories. Yet his old memories were fine. This unintended experiment revealed the hippocampus was needed to weave new memories, particularly the context which episodic memories made every day, like what you saw when you walked your dog in the park this morning. These detailed memories aren't stored in the hippocampus, though. Over time, they are transferred to the brain's outer shell, the cortex. We know this from patients who, when these parts of the brains have been electrically stimulated, recall particular memories. The uploading of these memories generally involves compressing information, somewhat like the way we compress computer files for long-term storage. It was also believed to take place over several days. This coarse-grained picture was largely how things stood until 5 years ago. That's when Tonawinga's lab, a collaboration between Japan's Riken Brain Center and Brain Science Institute and MIT, reduced a couple of near-mythical ideas to practice by using state-of-the-art technology known as optogenetics. One of the idea was optogenetics. One of the ideas was that of Sermons Engram. A memory, he posited, would leave a physical trace in the brain, and the brain, when stimulated, would replay the memory. Sermon proposed this idea decades before researchers understood neurons sent signals via electrical impulses. Researchers have since decoded much of the electrical signaling which passes between neurons and shown how learning a memory corresponds to strengthening of connections or synapses between individual neurons. Yet no one had ever been able to match a particular ensemble of neurons in the brain to a particular memory. In 1999, Francis Crick, a Nobel Prize winner who turned his talents to unpackaging the mysteries of the brain, mused that, to make progress, pulses of light might be employed to activate individual neurons in a living animal. Quote, "This seemed rather far-fetched," he wrote, "but it's conceivable that molecular biologists could engineer a particular cell type to be sensitive to light." Just 6 years later, Stanford neuroscientists Edward Boyden and Carl Dissenthoff, much to their own surprise, made a reality with their pioneering work in optogenetics. They co-opted a light switch used by green algae, the channel rod spin protein. When zapped by blue light, the protein opens a pore, allowing positively charged ions to flow across the cell membrane. This flow of current signals the flagella at the opposite end of the algal cell to beat, propelling it towards the light. Researchers found they could insert a single channel rhodopsin gene into an individual neuron by using an infected virus as a courier. They also ensured only cells that had recently made a memory produced the light switch gene. Memory-making cells produced a protein called CFOS. So the gene was engineered to only make the cells to be only made in cells producing CFOS. In 2012, Tone Gua's group used optogenetic technique to demonstrate the existence of a fear engram. A mouse was placed in a box with a distinctive wall pattern and floor textures. Whenever it was placed in that box, it received an electric shock. Subsequently, just placing it in the shock box was enough to make it cringe. Researchers also identified a group of cells in the hippocampus actively making the light switch, the smoking gum, indicating those cells had been involved in making memory. To prove that was the case, the scientists then threaded an optical fiber through the brain of the hippocampus to the hippocampus to target these cells. When they zapped the hippocampus with a rhythmic flashes of blue light, the mouse froze as if it were reliving the memory of being placed in the shock box. It was the first evidence of an engram, a collection of a few hundred cells that, when stimulated, replayed the memory. In this new study, the researchers wanted to see what happened to the hippocampus engram in the mouse over time. Other studies had suggested it was a particularly small patch of the cortex, the prefrontal cortex, where fear memories appeared to be stored. So the researchers infected the cells of the prefrontal cortex with the virus containing the light switch. They found something curious. As before, once the mouse learnt to fear the shock room, the memory could be replayed by directing light at the hippocampus. The surprise was the memory could also be provoked by flashing lights in the prefrontal cortex cells. So the engram, it seemed, was simultaneously uploaded to the prefrontal cortex. This was surprising, notes Tawanga, because it indicated that the cortical memory was likely created on the very first day and not gradually as assumed. However, when the mice were placed in the shock room, cringing at the memory, those same cells of the prefrontal cortex were silenced, as evidenced by checking the chemical activity in the isolated brain tissue. It was only a couple of weeks after the experience that the cells in the prefrontal cortex fired when the mouse was placed in the shock room. Conversely, the engram in the hippocampus began to fade. So, when it comes to long-term memory storage, first a silent copy is made in the prefrontal cortex. Only gradually does it become cemented while the hippocampal engram is erased. Just what that long-term cement is, though, remains to be determined by Tasuki Kitamura, the first author of the paper. Ross says, another key to cementing memory was that the prefrontal cortex needed to get inputs from both the hippocampus and the amygdala, the emotional center of the brain. When the researchers blocked neuronal inputs from either, again employing light switches, the cortex memory failed to cement. How might this information help people? While we can't implant light switches, it's nevertheless possible to switch particular regions of the brain on and off by implanting fine electrodes using a technique known as deep brain stimulation. Already, these treat disorders such as Parkinson's disease. Kumar imagines it will one day be possible to use similar techniques to manipulate engrams in the brain, but first we need to map them out in mice. Given the breakneck speed at which this field is progressing, the era of manipulating our engrams might not be far off. So just to repeat it through and read it here, they have a particular called rhodopsin gene. Take the light responsive rhodopsin gene and attach a switch to ensure it is only active in cells that have just made a memory. So you have a gene, but it can only be switched. The gene is only switched on by chemical released when the neuron has just made a memory. Now, the modified gene is inserted into a virus, which can then be injected into the mouse brain. So the virus then takes the gene and puts it in the mouse's DNA. So what happens is that when you have a memory, it starts producing light-sensitive stuff. Okay. The virus infects many nerve cells, but because of the switch, only memory cells only memory cells make the Rossbyn gene. Fiber optic probes inserted into the animals make the mouse revive these memories. So what happens is that light then gets these, this light basically activating this gene. So when there's a memory, the memory produces a chemical. The chemical activates the gene. The gene is then activated by the light, which then makes the neurons fire. So you can actually turn on, if there's a memory, you can turn on that memory by flashing light into it. Yep, so there's various things that really need to be said very carefully in here, but it's a pretty amazing idea. The other amazing idea here is that the cementing process needs to be, it's like there's a dual process where it's put in the hippocampus, but in your prefrontal cortex, and then when it's not in the hippocampus, reinforces that memory, rebuilds it, so it's sort of a dual thing. But there's a second thing necessary for a memory, and that's an emotional switch. So you could well imagine that people who are not emotionally cared for will have difficulty memory things. So your memory things is very emotionally sensitive. It's also not necessarily clear that people have replay memories too easily if they've got post-traumatic stress order. But it also makes sense that if you're very emotionally charged, those memories are super, super burnt in by reading a very interesting article and well worth thinking about it. Just repeat what's going on. So there's this engram. An engram is a series of cells. And now the hippocampus is sort of, I think it's like a horseshoe. That's why it's called a hippocampus. It's a horseshoe of white dense matter in the base of the brain. And they didn't know what it did until they removed one. And then they said that person couldn't remember anything. Now, when you first memorize something, there's some element of the brain which can be stimulated. Now, I think what happens is that, as far as I can see, in the hippocampus, they shine blue light in a large area. It's a bit of a hit and miss thing. I could well imagine a blue light scattering inside the brain. So anything which forms a memory would then fire the memory. So you have one memory, you fire a game. So that's it. So if you only give the mouse one thing to remember, you can refire it again. Then they fire the memory at the front of the brain. So the important thing is that it doesn't take necessarily a large time for the memory to form in the front of the brain. It takes a while for the memory to be removed from, say, your short-term memory, then goes into your longer-term memory up the top there. But that process of being cemented permanently in the long-term memory requires stimulation from your amygdala. Now, where the actual research and the support from that is hard to actually pick up there. But then it requires a bit, a sort of a sequence to record and repeat over that. So that's perhaps, I think, the best way of doing it, rather than putting comments as I read in the middle of it, but putting a comment, sort of summarising, reading the article, re-explaining the article, and making a few basic comments might be the better way of doing it, rather than actually introducing comments halfway through the article. Thanks for listening. I hope that I'm just gradually improving the way that I can present and discuss things. I'm hoping it's easier to listen to, and hopefully that will put me in good stead when eventually I return to school. Thanks for listening.